listeners. My name is Arushavit, and you're listening to the Slice of Orange, North Orange County podcast. Slice of Orange is a podcast that dissects politics in North Orange County. This election season, our team will interview candidates on NOC's ballot, explain propositions and ballot measures, and discuss general election trends. Our goal is to increase civic knowledge in the public and introduce you to ways of getting involved. My name is Arush Navid, and I am your host for the day. Today, we are interviewing Hilda Sugarman, who is the Trustee Area 2 representative on the Fulton Board of Trustees and the president of the Fulton Education Foundation. Hilda is running for re-election and will be facing opposition from James Cho. Hilda, thank you so much for being on the show with us today.
Hi.
So you have been in office for some time. So my first question for you really is, what have you learned serving in a local office and representing people on this level?
It's a great question. Before I ran for school board, I held a lot of PTA jobs and leadership roles. And I thought I knew a lot about schools and parents. And just to be sure, I took a course called North Orange County Leadership to teach me lots more. Well, all of that completed, I ran for office and I was fortunate enough to win. And what I learned was the learning curve was steep. All of my previous knowledge did not prepare me for everything that the board did. So first, I've learned about trust. I think trust is the most important part of effectively doing my job. I have to have the trust of all the staff. I have to have the trust of families and my community. My words must be honest, and I must follow through fairly and quickly, because nobody wants to wait a long time for issues to be resolved. Second, brings me to the complications of fairness. You've got to be fair. And what I've learned was that while an action may be in the best interest of one student or one employee, it may be harmful for others. For example, perhaps a student does something unacceptable to another student. In a hearing, you might discover that the student that was the culprit, you might say, of the incident, has many difficulties in their life and had all sorts of issues that led up to what they did that was inappropriate. Yet, on the other hand, if you don't reprimand that child in an appropriate way, it's not in the best interest of the student who was harmed. And somehow you have to get a balance there between doing what's best for all parties. And that is complicated. Finally, emotionality. That's the third thing I've learned. I've learned that on the board, when sitting on the dais, you can be accused of anything. You can be spoken to somewhat disrespectfully. But you must put your emotions aside and make fair decisions. You must put your emotions aside and listen to the words of the person, because their bottom meaning can be very impactful for the good. And so being fair involves taking the emotion out of listening. And I think those are the three most important things I've learned, other than listening is paramount.
Understood. Thank you for explaining that. Could you, you mentioned you took a class about leadership, or was it being a local representative? Could you talk a little bit about more of that class?
Sure. I took a course called North Orange County Leadership, and it had all sorts of elected leaders that would come and speak to you and explain to you your role if you are a public elected leader. And one of the things I learned was when you sit on the dais, people can say things that are not nice to you. I'm not talking, you know, things that you would stop for disruptive behavior, but I'm saying they can call you names, they can misrepresent you, but you cannot argue back at them, because as an elected person sitting on the board, you have to listen to what the public has to say. In that class, I learned about finance, school finance, and where all the monies come from. People on within that class were also running for city offices, and we learned about water supplies and road supplies and how monies funnel in and your responsibilities. So it's a great broad class on what you need to know as a public official.
Fantastic. Where was this class? I'm just curious because I feel like if our listeners are interested and if this class is still offered, they might want to take it too.
I don't know. I think it was through the junior college, but we didn't meet at the junior college. Each time we met at a public location, meaning a park, a library, some sort of a facility that we may not be familiar with in North Orange County, to make us more aware and the broad sense of what people might be discussing when they come before you.
Oh, got it. That is very interesting. Thank you.
That's a great class. So,
yeah, it sounds like a great class. So it seems like, you know, you have already shared with us some of the lessons you've learned while being in office. But now I want to ask you, what you consider to be your top three accomplishment while you have been in office?
It's not often that one takes the time to step back and focus in narrowly on what one's accomplished. And it sounds boastful, but I'll give you some thoughts here, okay? First, I believe that my role in bringing the one-to-one laptop program to Fullerton schools impacted forever forward the Fullerton School District. Fullerton was the first district west of the Mississippi to implement a student one-to-one program. And originally, it was implemented as a trial program to see if all students in all grade levels of all abilities would benefit. While the idea of youngsters using technology is now totally accepted, in 2003, the idea of students younger than college or high school was shocking to many of the community. And there was even a negative blog about me for suggesting to do this. That initial one-to-one program has led the Fullerton School District to embrace all areas of technology, from coding to flying drones, et cetera. And Fullerton School District has received more honors relating to our one-to-one program and technologies than any other school district in the Western Hemisphere. Is that amazing? Any other school district in the Western Hemisphere. We are a leader. Mm-hmm. And of course, now we wish that sometimes the kids don't use their devices. Talk to us. But okay. Second, I helped establish the Fullerton Education Foundation. Originally, that was the Fullerton Excellence in Education Foundation. Too long a name. Back around 2003, that happened because we needed to find a way to help fund the one-to-one program. And our initial job was to help families who wanted to buy a device but didn't have funds do a 50-50 match. For 19 years, I've been president of that organization, and our mission is to, quote, to enrich the educational experience of teaching and learning in every classroom. Through community support, the foundation provides resources, technology, grants, and experiences to inspire learning and create innovative opportunities for more effective teaching. To date, the foundation has donated over $3.25 million to the district. Those dollars have impacted classrooms, district programs, school-wide programs. And for example, this year, we did our first ever funding of something called a tiny home, where children from Woodshop at Nicholas Junior High built a tiny home. The district by law couldn't have given the $100,000 needed for that project. So the Fullerton Education Foundation was the conduit, and we raised $40,000 ourselves to donate. And then other people donated to us, and we passed the money forward. And now a family actually lives in that tiny house, and we're doing a second one this year. And the family who lives there has been connected, linked to Orange County United to get all the support services that they require. They're allowed to live there for 6 to 8 months, and another family will move in. Here's my ad. People can donate to the Fullerton Education Foundation. Just go to our website. Third, and finally, a proud accomplishment. I was board president during the COVID time. Our students were back to learning within 24 to 36 hours of school closure. They had their devices, and we provided a hotspot to families without connectivity. Actually, we gave two hotspots if families had more than two children that needed to be online at the same time. 5 days a week, the district provided three meals and two snacks to every family who wanted it. In order to accomplish this, I'll call it a feat, the district partnered with five Fullerton restaurants because, of course, in our kitchens, we had to stand far apart and all, so we had fewer staff, so we needed help. Together, the district and these restaurants provided food, mental health relief, and kept those five restaurants afloat. At the board table, I planned and implemented a respectful, calm environment for our meetings. And if people read in the newspapers during that time, many school boards fell into chaos. We started our meeting outside to give our awards in a safe space with heaters out there. Then we moved indoors for our business meeting. All speakers were allowed to speak, and we listened carefully. We did what we were legally able to support their concerns. Fullerton schools opened sooner than other districts. Even our high school district didn't open as soon as we did. Our student learning loss was less than in most districts. And I'm proud of our board. I'm proud of our teachers. And I'm proud of our staff. What everybody did to join together to help families and students. So those are my three things.
And they're very impressive. Thank you for sharing all of these. So seems like, you know, you have done so much good work and you have learned so many things in office, but I do want to ask you specifically why you have embarked on this journey to run again. You know, what is your biggest encouragement in this? And what do you think you can prioritize, you know, kind of the three things you'll prioritize if and when you are reelected?
Wow. You asked part of a question I hadn't thought about, and that was who encouraged me. Interestingly, I have six grandchildren, and I volunteer in their schools. They're in LA County because it would be inappropriate for me to be part of volunteering in one particular program here. And that way I get a little bit of my hands on and what's going on in schools firsthand. And it was my grandchildren who said, "Grandma, you have to run again because Fullerton schools are doing better things than the schools we attend. And don't walk away from that. That's a really important thing." So they were like my number one supporters. And I believe that to reach the best decision for our students, our staff, our community, it's important for our board to have a diversity of opinions and experiences. That allows us to have a broad view of issues and reach common ground, good common ground, great common ground. And currently, three of our board members are the very same age, isn't that crazy? And have their children in one program, dual language. Further, two of our three board members have their children in the very same classrooms. And none of those three have a plethora of prior school leadership roles or experiences. They have great life experiences. Don't And I would never put that down. That's important for decision making. And while they have school age children, I have school age grandchildren. So we come from different places. I have worked to know our schools and programs. I've worked to have relationships with teachers, secretaries, custodians, maintenance crew, bus drivers, kitchen staff, everybody. I respect a different population of concerned community members who must also be heard when we're making policy. So I believe that my voice offers an important balance on the board. And that's not to distract from any of my colleagues, because I have four colleagues who are so dedicated to doing what they feel is really the best for kids. And I just think that I offer something different than they offer, and that it's on the positive side. And by the way, I love what I do. I love my teachers. I love my classified workers. I love my students, my community. It's an honor, truly from the heart. It is an honor to work on the school board.
Understood. Thank you for explaining that. So I also wanted to ask you a couple of questions that are, I think, on a national scale concerning school boards these days, and especially come up during election time. So the first of that question is, what is your opinion on charter schools, and then specifically for the Fullerton School District? I think this was more of a concern last election cycle than this one, but Fullerton specifically, what would be your opinion?
In general?
In general.
I think we have to have the same definition. So I looked it up, and here's what I found. Charter schools are publicly funded schools that operate independently from their local district. Charter schools are often operated and maintained by a charter management organization. There are some for nonprofit and some for profit. Charter schools are held accountable by their authorizer. There's a debate on whether charter schools should be described as private schools or state schools. Advocates for the charter side say that they are public schools because they're open to all students and do not charge tuition. Critics of charter schools assert that charter schools are a private operation with a lack of public accountability, and that makes them more like a private institution subsidized by the public. So that's the premise I'm going to use to answer your question, okay? I believe in public education. I went to public schools. My husband went to public schools. My parents went to public schools. My children went to public schools. I'm an advocate. I taught in public schools. I think that education of our public is essential for the security of our democratic country. We need an educated populace. That being said, schools must be of the highest quality and educators held accountable for student success. Sounds simple, but believe me, it isn't. Teacher training must be ongoing. Teachers work hard. Our student populations vary from state to state, city to city, and even school to school. Successful teaching is complicated. This is my overarching thought about charter schools. About 70% of the schools in our nation are successful. They are the places we want our kids to attend. However, there are those schools that are not successful, and some of them are not safe. I do not think that families should be forced to send their children to schools that are either failing their students or not safe. If charter schools can provide a safer, more successful education for those students, great. However, charter schools also have a 30% unsuccessful rate, same as public schools. Those unsuccessful schools must be held accountable and not funded if they fail students. I guess what I'm sort of saying is, children need to have the ability to attend schools that are both going to educate them and be a safe place for them. All students are entitled to a safe and accountable education. And there are times that might include going to charter schools.
Understood. Thank you for explaining that. My next question is, what is your stance on book bans?
Okay, everything is complicated. I am against book bans. I would have said period. However, as I thought about that question, I do believe that students, especially in our pre-K through eighth grade district, should have access to books that are age appropriate. And I think that's important. Even when parents take their children to the library, there's the children's section and the adult section. And that's not talking about banning books. That's just talking about age appropriate. Now, the state does ban some books and forbids us to use them in education. Some of them we used a decade ago, and now they're on the ban list from the state or from the federal government. I don't get that. In those cases, our district must follow the law, but we, as individuals and as board members, must let our state officials and our federal officials know that we disagree with their decision and ask for a change in the law. And I would emphasize, we need to get changes in laws that ban books like 1984 and To Kill a Mockingbird. They have been staples in education a long time. Schools may not want to use them anymore, but banning books is really not right in this country.
Thank you for sharing your view on that. So my next question is about students who have different needs. So students that come from low-income households who may have special needs. How do you intend to support these students who come from these diverse backgrounds? And what do you think are some kind of tangible solutions to serving students within different populations, but you know they're all part of our school district?
Great question. And they're important to us, each and every one of them. I want to continue to support low-income students with food. The district provides our community school students with breakfast. We give free lunches. The Education Foundation provides free tiny bites for snacks to those who need them at any school at any time. Schools work with the National Giving Group and the Assistance League, Project School Bell, and through the Hub to give clothing to students. Students need to have a proper clothing, especially in junior high. And these resources are so fabulous for our kids. Only one family at a time, but the Education Foundation will continue to raise money this year for construction of a second tiny home to house a homeless family. I'm proud of that. And it's one family at a time, but we're doing something. And I'm proud to be leading that for the foundation. This year, Fullerton School District started a performance academy for elite athletes. For those who qualify, but yet do not have the money to pay the after-school academies, there will be a scholarship. I think that this is the first opportunity I've ever heard of where students can go to public school, then go to a program to support elite athletic ability and not have to pay for it. It evens the playing field between those that have the money, those families that scrounge up the money, and those families that just don't have the ability to pay. And I'm hopeful that we will be seeing excellent rising stars as a result of this project. And by the way, it also includes dance and all the sports you've just thought of. And it's really exciting. We'll see how it works after 1 year. To support children from low-income families, we also have to support their parents. We have to support the families so that they can support the education of their children. Our district offers lots of parent programs, from parenting classes to healthy cooking classes, and that those classes will help make families a better place for children. You mentioned special needs students, and I have a special heart for special needs students. I love everybody, but when you go into a special needs class, especially a severe special needs class, your heart just wants to reach out and hug every one of them. I support co-teaching, where special needs students participate in non-special needs classrooms. These mild to moderate special ed children have been for 4 and 5 years going into general ed programs. That means that those programs have the special ed teacher, the special ed support staff, and a regular teacher. And they all work together to make the classroom environment exceptional for all their students. This program has been in place 4 or 5 years, and parents of both the special needs and general education students really like the program. And I'm very proud that our district was one of the first to implement a co-teaching program like this. I've gone to DC and written our representatives regarding special ed funding. The federal government passes legislation mandating schools to do things for special education students. The laws say that they will pay 20% of the costs. In reality, they pay about 11% and give IOUs for the rest. Those IOUs are historically never paid. The district may keep, well, not may, must keep accurate, detailed, costly records on the chance that we might one day be repaid. Meanwhile, that unpaid 9% costs us millions of dollars. To do the mandates, the district must take the money from other programs. This ongoing issue needs to be corrected, and we need somehow to put some weight by the voters on our legislators to know that it's really nice that new programs are created every year in this country, but if we're going to mandate things, we must first fund the mandates. So help me get that word out, please, and let's get our mandates funded for special ed, and that will ripple and affect all the kids in our district to have better programs and stronger programs.
Right. Thank you for sharing that. And I'm hoping that the listeners can also help you get the word out on that.
Thank you. So,
yeah, you're welcome. So I think kind of in the same lane of helping students with a diverse set of needs, during COVID and the quarantine, we saw how our kids, they faced setbacks, they were struggling in their educational journeys. And we're really starting to see the ripple effects of that now that students are back in school. So what do you think the district needs to do to combat these issues and help our students kind of get over the gaps in education and perhaps the struggles that the quarantine had created for them?
Lots. Our children did suffer. They suffered learning loss due to COVID-19. Our teachers are experts. They're able to make up learning loss in our schools over time. Over the last 3 years, we've seen that. They should be proud and thanked for learning recovery magic that our teachers are accomplishing. Data focused on student subgroups and new evaluated programs have been implemented, especially for our most vulnerable kids. I believe that the bigger issues remaining from that pandemic are social and emotional hits on our students and their families. To address those issues, the district has hired 23 additional counselors. We have folks in schools and on the playgrounds. We have eliminated the use of cell phones from bell to bell because not only students, but parents have all sorts of issues and phone their children a lot during the school day. So it's complicated. And we need to support those big issues of social and emotional. And I think that's where we have to focus.
Understood. Thank you for sharing that. So now I want to move on a little bit to a connection with the community, right, as a local representative. So school district races, these are often low information races where voters barely know that they exist before they get to the end of the ballot. And they may not even know who's running, who's who, what the issues at stake are exactly. How do you get the word out that you're running, and how do you plan on connecting with constituents and being available for them?
Wow, what a great question. If only I had a great answer. You're right. The first time I ran for school board, I think that most of the people thought they elected my husband. And they asked him how he did his job, plus worked on the school board. So I don't know. I believe that I have to speak to a lot of people. I have to walk in my area. I have to be open to anybody who wants to connect with me and talk to me, whether or not they like me, because that honesty and listening is really important. I have to ask my friends to spread the word. But obviously, I don't have a perfect way to spread the word. And if you come up with one, please share it with me.
Right. I think this is one of the issues that a lot of folks are battling with, you know, on different city levels is how do you connect to our, how do we connect to constituency? How do we connect to voters? How do we connect to just the community again? I think COVID really also messed things up in a lot of ways. So I've actually been asking this question to everyone who's running and everyone that I've interviewed. And there's a variety of responses. People have been sharing different social media and things that they're doing to connect with folks, again, walking precincts, going to community events and such. But those have been kind of the answers that I've gotten so far.
I think also connecting with people who have chat groups or Zoom groups and asking if you can join them for a day and talk, speaking that way. People seem to like to stay in their own homes and not have to get dressed and go somewhere to meet. And I think that's another way of connecting first with community, and sometimes a much larger community than you can connect with just one-on-one. But it also allows you to meet new people.
Right. And I think more of those groups have been created because of COVID. So Zoom conferences and Zoom seminars and these online WhatsApp and chat groups and whatnot. Those have really taken over some of our organizing and socializing, too.
I agree. I totally agree.
Now I'll move on to a really fun question we ask all the folks to join us on the podcast, which is, can you please give our listeners a book recommendation?
I actually have two. I don't know if your listeners are going to like my books, though, because they're so nerdy. But the two books I would recommend, one is called Creativity, Inc. It's by Ed Catmull, C-A-T-M-U-L-L. And he's the co-founder of Pixar Animation. It is so interesting to listen to his illumination of how the culture of Pixar was created and many, many, many examples that are just enjoyable to read and to say, oh my goodness, how can I relate that to what I do? So I really like that book. And there's a second book. It's called Out of My Mind. It's by someone named Sharon Draper, D-R-A-P-E-R. And this book is written in the voice of a young person who has no abilities to walk, to move, or to speak. This child is locked in a gifted mind and ability to hear. And how this child sees the world and ventures into the world and what the child does, it's mind-boggling to me and so interesting. The story is supposed to be about Melody with a photographic memory, and she is 11 years old. So if you have an interest in something like that, Out of My Mind is a really great book to read.
Thank you. Those are both great recommendations for books and things that I haven't seen before. So I certainly would be checking those out.
Good.
So is there anything else that I have not asked you in this interview, but you would like our listeners to know?
Yes. I think that the workplace environment is totally indispensably important to a successful school district. School boards are established as nonpartisan boards of governance. I believe that it's very important for decision-making and spirit that we follow that policy of nonpartisanship. Everyone needs to work for the common good. Boards must be good listeners, no matter who delivers a comment or request. In every comment and request, there seems to be a shred of a reason why we should listen and do something. And if we can, we should, no matter who's bringing us the message. Next, we didn't talk about our school district's horrible infrastructure. And I can't miss the opportunity to say that we need to pass the bond that's currently up for Fullerton Elementary School District, because our schools were built in the 50s and 60s. During COVID and during times of financial distress in the state of California, we had deferred maintenance and infrastructure, and we emphasized safe and comfortable learning. With awareness of this evolution in technology, our infrastructure has to be upgraded. So I would ask our people to please support a bond to support our schools. And I think that that would make their souls very happy. And that's it, I think.
Well, thank you, Hilda, for sharing all these insights with us today and for being on the show. I really appreciated this conversation, and I hope our listeners will as well. And I do want to say, I do want to ask you one quick last question. If the listeners want to reach out to you and contact you, how can they do that?
They can do that easily. They can email, which is reelectsugarman, really easy, SUGARMAN. @gmail.com and send me an email. And I always answer emails. Sometimes it takes me a day or two to get to them, just because I get about 150 a day. But not to fear, I will always get back to you. And I appreciate all communication because it's important.
Yes, thank you for sharing your email with us, and we'll make sure to have those in the show, have the email address in the show notes for people to access. So that was a Slice of Orange NSC's interview with Hilda Sugarman. Thank you so much for being with us today. For more episodes, please check out Slice of Orange NSC on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We are also on Facebook and Instagram, so be sure to follow us there. Thank you again, Hilda.